Hi, everybody. It's Dean Anglin from the offices of Rational Exuberance here in the heart of the downtown historic core of Los Angeles, in the middle of the Art Deco wonder that is the Eastern Columbia. And this is your Chillpack Hollywood Hour. And I'm here with my co-host and your co-host, technically, Mr. Phil Ernest, ladies and gentlemen.
I will be going to each and every one of your homes co-host whatever you've got going on.
Perhaps at the dinner.
I certainly, after finally getting a good night's sleep, I have more than enough energy to do so.
You're going to do dishes, laundry, the whole thing?
I will be co-hosting your dishes and your laundry.
That'll be awesome. We'll have that contest.
I don't mean to change the subject,
please,
but really we have nowhere we're going with this.
No, I am so out of steam. You got sleep, I did not.
We're at a big conference in Irvine, California this weekend. Although you keep saying it's Santa Ana, but if I'm in the Irvine Hilton,
you're in Santa
Ana.
I'm
in Irvine.
You're at in technically,
you can't take my Irvine dreams away from me, Dean Hagman.
I'm going to stuff Santa Ana down your throat. Also,
wow, let's all try to wash that from our collective memories if we can. We were there for Project Camelot's Awake and Aware conference.
Yes.
And for those people who have seen our documentary, The Truth Is Out There, they will no doubt recall that Awake and Aware is a conference we attended 2 years ago.
Yes.
And where we conducted a wide range of interviews, both people we sought out, such as your friend Jordan Maxwell.
Rob Simone.
Well, we didn't seek him out.
Oh, that's right.
That's the thing, we sought out. We were there because Jordan was going to be there. Richard Dolan was going to be there.
Yeah.
The preeminent historian on all matters UFO and government cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went there to interview them, and then while there met...
Bob Dean. Rob Simone,
Peter Sterling,
Cynthia Crawford,
E.T. Sculptress. Her website is etsculptor.com.
That's right.
I like E.T. Sculptress, though. That's just so.
That's
and more... she is quite a lady, so Sculptress just sounds more regal to me.
We should tell her.
And we saw her again this weekend, and. And she makes, as they all do, but she really makes an indelible contribution to The Truth Is Out There.
Yes.
I mean, people
remember
are fascinated by her.
Yes.
Fascinated by her. Because her story, for many people, is incredibly unique and outside the pale of their usual... what they experience in their usual lives.
Totally.
Both in terms of the content of her story and also, quite frankly, her personality.
And
itself.
You missed some of her story then. The you were gone when she came back and told an extension of her story.
Right. Though I've got it. I got it relayed to me, and then of course she and I had a nice conversation yesterday.
Yes, that's right.
Anyway, I bring this up because with us at the Awake and Aware. Conference was our guest.
Oh,
this morning
we have a guest.
And she, as soon as we got there at that conference on Saturday, you were in fact as soon as we arrived, you were trying to introduce us to Dr. Louis Turi, fascinating man, who
astrologer,
historian of Nostradamus' work, and a fascinating man, and we'll probably talk about him and maybe with him in the future.
When that be?
But this is how I remember it. We arrived. You were talking to Dr. Turi. You introduced me to Dr. Turi. You introduced our guest this morning to Dr. Turi, and our guest more or less held up a hand and said, save it, and then made a beeline for Cynthia Crawford.
Yep.
And screamed out, Mom, I'm home. our guest is one Lily Holloman.
Lily Holloman, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello.
Now, long time.
I'm home.
Loyal listeners.
Yes.
Of your Chillpack Hollywood Hour.
Yes.
We'll remember that Lily was a guest back in fall of 2007.
Wow.
After completing the Lifetime film Queen-Sized.
Queen-Sized,
yep.
Which I think you came back probably in November. You were probably on our show in early December or something like that.
Yes.
Talking about the shoot that had just taken place. And then 1 month later, the film... premiered just on Lifetime. Fast, the turnaround time on that was extraordinary.
That's fast editing.
Teen as big as a queen, as known in Israel.
No? No way, really?
Yep.
So for all our Israeli listeners,
yes,
they don't have
what's it known as
queen size in other countries.
Right.
That's not a clever thing.
So it's teen as big as a queen.
What is it in Japan?
Is queen? Yeah.
What?
What is it known as in Japan? There's an obvious Shamu joke in here somewhere. Oh, Nikki Blonsky. And then, though, what's very interesting about Lily Holloman, we'll get to her actual professional credits in a moment.
Let's do that.
But one of the most interesting little bits of trivia about Chilpak Hollywood Hour
trivia
is who other than Dean Haglund and Phil Lernis have hosted episodes of Chilpak Hollywood Hour.
Why?
And I think the only person is Lily Holloman, because yours truly, Phil Lernis, was Song's voice.
That's right.
In January of 2008.
And through extensive auditioning, we did voice sound-alikes and came up with Lily Holloman.
So you didn't know. Yeah. She claimed to be me.
I didn't know.
No.
I threw the headset. You're welcome.
I know.
Yeah.
The sound-alike is so incredible. You're going to have to state your name each time each one of you speaks throughout
it's
the
true.
Rest of the show.
Like Denny Crane on Boston Legal.
That's right.
I should just start doing that anyway.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen.
You know what's interesting about that is that when I am introduced to people and people ask me my name, I only ever give them my first name.
Really?
That's really, I don't ever say Phil Lernis. I say Phil. Hi, I'm Phil. Because you know what? I'm your friend in podcasting.
And they
yeah,
know
but
that.
Everybody does that. You're not strange in that. That's why I do my full name.
Yeah, you do your full name. Right. And I'm just saying, and that makes you much more like Denny Crane than I am.
I often on the phone, though, will go, hey, Phil Lernis, Dean Haglund.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'll do that too.
Yeah, yes. Just absolutely. So you know that it's not that other Phil who sounds like Lily Holloman.
And it is odd, though, because we have absolutely nothing else. It's not like there was a purpose for the call. You just do that.
I just do that. Just state my name.
Phil Lernis, Dean Haglund. And I say, very well done. And then we're on.
Very good. Welcome to the show, Lily.
Welcome
Thank
back
you.
To
welcome
the
back.
Show.
It's like old times.
You are in quite the different offices of Rational Exuberance than the last time you were on the show. The last time you were on the show, it was
the third
at
floor.
Cinema Arts Entertainment.
That's right.
Yes.
5610 San Vicente Boulevard.
63.
Was it 6310?
I think it was 6310.
Something?
5310 something? Floated on, that was a guy's house down the street.
Yeah, don't show up.
Don't show up at that guy's house.
If you are shown that guy's house as part of the Chilpak Hollywood Hour tour,
then you have been ripped off, sir.
You have been ripped off. And quite frankly, anyway, you've been ripped off.
Any of those maps of the stars are all lies.
I guess, Lily Holloman, why were you so excited to meet E.T. sculptress Cynthia Crawford?
Well, first off, I will say that Mr. Dean Haglund...
That's me.
I was going to warm up into the whole introduction. I was a little bit nervous and starstruck.
Oh.
And Dean actually pushed me into the ice-cold pool right away. He said he knew that I was there to meet Cynthia, and he
Adult
made
swim.
The introduction. And as soon as he made the introduction, it was all about what kind of alien experiences I had had.
Well, and what kind of alien experiences have you had?
That's the point. She didn't have any.
Dean, we call Dean Papa Bird around here because he does. He pushes you out of the nest and lets you prove that you know how to fly.
Well, here's the... Okay, I like to point out that the sales... Like, for those who are picturing this, there were tables along a narrow hallway. Cynthia Crawford was two tables across from us, and she happened, just as you arrived, to be leaving her table and walking towards us. So it wasn't that I just went, oh, good, you're here, and throw you at her. And I thought the opportunity would be lost had you then, you know, she walked by and went into her conference or whatever.
Indeed.
Then, lo and behold, you would be sitting there staring at Dr. Turi, who maybe you didn't really want to talk to.
Hey, so. I appreciate it.
What,
I,
now
you
appreciate
know.
It. Wait, it's, I just heard I got you thrown
no,
in the cold
was,
pool.
It was, it's a twofold thing, you know? It's both.
I see. So you both are disappointed of how I threw
it. It was hilarious, though.
No, and it was just a tad overwhelming.
Oh, overwhelming.
But well, you handled it very well. I've never been to an alien conference before. This was,
wait, you were at a UFO. Did you go to a UFO?
You know,
that was a little different.
It was a little different because there wasn't... she was with us in San Leandro at the UFO X-Fest. And,
yeah, but there wasn't panels or tables and booths.
Right.
Stuff.
It was all presentations and you're all safely distanced.
Yeah.
People such as us are up on stage doing our dog and pony show.
Right.
And they are comfortably able to sit back if they want, arms folded, and say, entertain us, monkey boys.
Right. Damn it. Sorry.
So... what was hilarious, though, this last weekend about this on Saturday was, of course, as soon as they meet her, so tell us of your experiences. And then when Lily was kind enough to be mining our store for us, watching the table, which she's excellent at. She's extraordinary
at
selling the film. Has always been good at this at all these events that she's kind enough to help us
big
with.
Big sales.
She really does do a great job of selling the film.
In fact, we
should just record her doing a commercial for The Truth Is Out There and play it every week.
That's right.
As our
that.
New sponsor.
Hey.
We'll give her a few seconds at the bottom of the hour.
Look at that.
I like that. As if it's radio. The bottom of the hour. Right before we go to the traffic. The local traffic.
And school closures.
Anyway, so what was frustrating, I think, for her, though, was that people would then come by our table. And she'd go, oh, good, you know, someone to tell about The Truth Is Out There. And they would lean into her and say, I'm really looking forward to hearing about your experiences. And she just looked at me. She said, I get one introduction from Dean Haglund and suddenly I'm an experiencer. we should probably stop talking about this, though, right now, because, of course, you and I were supposed to do a little bit of a barter and get her... get Lily a certain alien sculpture, E.T. sculpture, that she wanted. But, of course, by the time we thought to do this yesterday, of course, it had been already purchased. So let's move on.
Yeah. You mean you didn't do it first thing in the morning?
No.
Well, we had a panel to go. We were there to see
Baba Yeke.
Baba Yeke. I sure hope he's not listening.
But it's spelled like
the Dogon. We have so much to talk about that event, but we've got a guest here.
We have a guest. Let's talk about our guest.
Lily Holloman.
How's it going?
This is a big day for you, really, quite frankly, because
it's a career turner right here.
Mm-hmm.
It's
being on the show.
It's a career
exactly.
pivot.
Being on the show.
So we hope you enjoyed your time.
And B, where are you off to next?
You are literally from this.
From this, I'm going to chasse on down to Costa Mesa, California, for my first rehearsal at the South Coast Repertory Theater for The Trip to Bountiful.
Wow.
A fantastic Horton Foote play.
Yeah.
That originated on Broadway in 1953, starring Lillian Gish and Eva Marie Saint.
Wow.
People may remember the Oscar-winning film from the mid-80s. I think it was 85. Geraldine Page won her long overdue Oscar for Trip to Bountiful. And the role that Lily is playing in this production, which was originated by Eva Marie Saint, was played in the 84-85 film by Rebecca De Mornay.
Wow.
So that's very good company that you are keeping.
That's awesome.
And
how long is the rehearsals?
1 month exactly. We open October 28th.
Wow. 5 days a week?
Oh, six days a week.
Holy
rehearsals.
Smokes.
Yes. Yeah.
That's intense.
And then eight performances a week.
Eight performances
yes,
a week. It's like
Tuesday,
vaudeville.
Yep. Yes, it's like vaudeville. Like my days traveling the road.
I let him on the train down to San Diego, to Chattanooga, and over then to Hemet.
The thing she has over Rebecca De Mornay, though not over Eva Marie Saint, of course, her juggling while on a unicycle is so great.
While on tightrope.
What? This is a huge venue. Now, you have performed, as we've talked about on this show, because
yes.
we were both there for opening night, you performed at South Coast Rep, which is really as big a venue as Southern California theater
could possibly get.
You were there at the beginning of this year with an amazing play. Tell us about that.
That was Circle Mirror Transformation.
You
by
are correct.
ding. by the phenomenal playwright Annie Baker, who is huge right now. She's won tons of Obie Awards. And
is it safe to say that she's teen with a size problem or whatever they say in Israel? When you say she's huge.
She's teen as big as a queen.
Yeah.
No.
She's
teen with a size problem.
She is...
That's the Israeli South name.
She's huge in the popular sense.
Yes.
And which would be equated to a queen, yes.
And in her influence. Really, influence. Truly in yes. her influence. I mean, Circle, Mirror, Transformation, this play, since you performed it, and of course, your production was actually directed by Sam Gold, who did the New York production.
Yes, the original off-Broadway production, which won all the awards.
Award-winning,
yes.
No less.
But it is now, I think, one of the two most produced regional plays.
It's
here.
The second most produced regional play in America this year.
After Love Letters?
No, this year after, I think, 39 Steps.
That's, yes.
Perhaps.
Oh, the comedic 39 Steps they do now? Yeah.
So this is your, but when we saw you in Circle Mirror, that was a venue that held maybe, what, 350, 400
yes.
people at mm-hmm. South Coast Rep.
Big.
This stage where you were doing this Horton Foote play, is it 1,000 seats?
I think it might be.
Even more?
Close. Not more.
Because that's an equity rule. Then you know, they pay you differently after 1,000 seats.
Mm.
No, I don't know if that's true.
I think it's 99.
Oh, 99. That's right. I get those two numbers.
1,000 seats. Yeah. I mean, this is...
That's a big house to fill.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
and
they do it.
And fill it, they do.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And this is going to be a big play, too. It's a cast of thousands.
Cast of thousands, yes.
Is that right?
That's how they fill the... Because when you're not on stage, you go take a seat.
They're seat fillers. They're the actors. No.
There's four principals, and then I think about six or eight ensemble.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
So
that's
this
cool.
is... And, I mean, what are you most looking forward to about this?
What I'm most looking forward to, well, I'm looking forward to all of it, particularly the fact that it's a period piece,
uh-huh.
and I have not gotten to do a period piece since my high school production of Guys and Dolls.
Who can forget?
Who can forget?
Now, when you say that it's a period piece,
yes.
it was written in 1953.
Set in 1953.
Okay, so when it was originally produced, it was not.
It was contemporary.
It was contemporary.
Right.
Although, again, the story, for those who aren't familiar, it's possibly the most beautiful meditation on aging in American culture of any American play.
Yes.
And at the time, although it was a contemporary play, its themes are about longing for a better time gone by in the past that may or may not have ever actually existed.
I mean, all of these themes were going on in 1953. It's this old woman who longs to return to the small town of Bountiful where she grew up. And she lives in a small apartment in Houston with her son and her daughter-in-law who won't let her go back. Says she's too crazy, too sick, and she so desperately wants to return to the joy she knew in Bountiful that she escapes and takes a bus ride, but she gets to the bus station to find out that Bountiful no longer exists. And she perseveres, she goes to the closest town, and it's basically been abandoned.
Spoiler alert.
Well, now I don't have to see.
But who do you play?
It's all about the new roads were being paved and people moved on and land was...
The paving over of an America gone by that we can't...
In 1953.
In 1953 that we can't know whether it existed or not. You
right.
know, this whole idea of, because she is at the end of her life, this older woman, fondly remembering how much better things were in this town of her youth, but you don't know. The way memory works, of course,
right.
you don't know, and we don't get to see it.
Right.
And what I find so fascinating is the movie version, the Oscar-winning movie, was made in the 1980s, height of the Reagan era, where there was clearly this emotional affection for the attitudes, the morals, the family value, all this of the 1950s, the comfort of the 1950s. Mm. Now, here we are in 2011, and everywhere I look, I see this appetite to go back to The 1980s.
When it was
which was the last time. So it's really fascinating that with this play, you can almost...
Do the echo.
Do the echo. Because, you know, first of all, you've got... A new version of Footloose coming out, right? Earlier this year, we had Arthur. We saw the movie Drive, and as you and I were talking about yesterday, it's really interesting how much even the artwork of it calls to mind certain films specifically from the 80s. There's much, and politically, everyone keeps evoking Reagan.
Absolutely.
On both sides.
And not only that, when we think about, we had the talk of studio executives and how we craved the studio executives of the 80s that actually had movie producing experience as opposed to the eggheads.
Back in the 80s, we longed for the, we talked about this last week, in the 80s, we were decrying the fact that we no longer had the studio executives of the 1950s. These were basically people running slave plantations in the sense of, you know, actors really being under contract, and you did what these people say, directors, writers as well. You did, but they were showmen.
They were showmen.
They loved the art form.
They knew movies in their blood.
Now we long for the glorious days of studio executives of the 80s, who, although they were businessmen first, they did come up through the ranks of actually producing films, so they knew how to make movies.
Right. As opposed to now, they're just sort of marketing and executing executives from Harvard. That.
So who do you play in this?
Oh, yes. Let's go back to Hallie.
So I play Thelma. And Thelma. She is a young woman of 26 who is on the bus. Her husband's just gone to war, and she's going back to live with her family in a tiny, tiny town in Texas. And she meets up with the main character.
And who's the actress playing the main character? Do we know her? Or do I know her?
I do not know her.
Oh. So this will be a very exciting rehearsal process.
Yes.
Because this is basically you two on a bus, and then you get off in the town.
Yep, it's us on a bus. It's us in the train, bus station. So I'm in the middle of the play.
Awesome. And you play Thelma.
Yes. Yep.
And then at the end, you hold hands and you drive the bus over a cliff. No.
Yes.
Yeah. You've seen it. What? Spoiler alert.
Well, we could talk about this play for quite a while because Horton Foote, one of our most prized playwrights in this country and South Coast rep, has the rights to all of his works. Can you just touch on this?
He was a friend of South Coast rep, a friend of the directors, Martin Benson.
You're kidding.
And he would come often, and he loved the space. He's no longer with us.
So he left them the rights to his plays. Put on his plays.
And so if I do any other play, I have to go to South Coast Rep to get the rights to do the play?
I don't think, no.
No.
I think
you
it's just South
you
Coast
have
Rep.
To go through the Somebody. Effort to obtain the rights, though.
Right.
To
but
do
if
it.
I did a
Whereas
South Coast
they,
Rep,
they it's, don't. The rights are granted in perpetuity.
It's as if he left all his plays lying around the office. They just pick one up and do it.
That's an interesting and not particularly apt analogy.
I'm good at those.
Now, you are not... So you leave from here to go to do this play. Meanwhile, across town, over in Santa Monica, breaking box office records at the New Art Theater, West L.A., I guess, is a film in which you are the lead called At Your Friends. And
yes.
For those who... I don't know.
Are going to come to L.A.?
Who are going
to
come. Don't spell it A-T. Spell it whatever that at symbol is. As in, think Twitter.
Yes.
It's at lowercase u, lowercase r, capital F, capital R, capital E, capital N, capital Z, at your friends
at
is
your
the
friends.
Name of the film.
Right.
They're thinking, of course, in part, in addition to this connoting a world of cyberspace,
right.
Was this will push it to the top of alphabetical lists because of the symbol at the beginning. Although not in the LA Times, where they ignored that at
part.
Sign altogether and just started it with the U, and it's at the bottom of the alphabetical list.
Because they thought that was a Twitter feed.
Nevertheless, giving it an incredibly rave review where they single out Lily Holloman.
Nah.
Lily will tell us a little bit about what this film is, but I wanted to point out that although it's playing at the New Art here in Los Angeles now, it is being brought to theaters in various parts of the country very soon, and it becomes available video on demand on October 1st on every cable system.
Look at that.
across the country.
As well as on iTunes. You can pre-order it on iTunes right now, which would be very helpful because that's some sort of important list to get on, apparently.
Okay.
Top pre-orders on iTunes.
You don't have to tell us, as the reigning top pre-order on iTunes for free podcasts
is...
I got nothing.
No, that's not even a list.
It's not even a list. That's it's not even on iTunes. Yeah,
no.
But it opened for a week in Los Angeles to qualify for award consideration, and it is already a film that has won numerous awards since its debut at Slam Dance in 2010. You won a handful of awards, including Best Actress at Method Fest. For this film.
Yep, I won Rising Star at Method Fest.
Look at you.
And Best Actress, beat out Laura Linney for Best Actress.
Holy crap.
How is that for a career trajectory when you, before your screening at a festival, you get an award for Rising Star. On the closing night of the festival, you get an award for Best Actress. And then...
2 weeks later, thank you for coming.
A month later, they held a special evening for Comeback of the Year Award and gave it to her. Who do you play in Your Friends? And what's the story of the film? At Your Friends, excuse me.
Yeah, look at you go.
I play the role of Catherine Parley. And she is a 16-year-old outcast. Social outcast. She is... she's unique in that I've never seen this character in a movie before. She is a cutter, and that's how she deals with this overwhelming...
You mean the psychological conditioning of a cutter, not someone who works in the fabric district?
Yes.
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 Should point that out.
Yes.
Here we are, close to the fashion district.
Yes, she deals with her vast well of overwhelming teenage angst and emotions through cutting.
Right.
And she is gets caught up in a web of deceit online.
Ooh.
She
cyberbullied.
She seeks out, or she is approached by a boy online who she very much believes is real. Who she falls in love with. And it turns out to be an ex-friend's mother who is seeking revenge.
Stolen from the headlines.
It is inspired by the Meghan Meyer case, the real-life Meghan Meyer case. The boy that she falls in love with, who is seen on screen, is played by James Maslow.
From Big Time Rush.
Big Time Rush fame. Any of our young listeners will certainly know that. They love him. my goddaughter... went nuts over the James Maslow autographed picture.
Really?
Yeah. Suddenly Lily's
the big deal?
Yeah, all she can. Wait, anytime I go visit my goddaughter, the question I get, where's Lily?
I want another James Maslow autographed picture.
So this film is, as I said, loosely inspired by the Meghan Meyer case. It deals with cyberbullying, as you say, but it really also deals with issues of intimacy. It deals with issues of parenting. I think this is one of the most compelling and rich pieces of the film, is this question of how do we raise young people who are self-sufficient and who have boundaries to protect themselves if we are in a position where we cannot honor their boundaries and are forced to invade their privacy just to keep them safe.
Right.
I mean, these are really, really, and especially at a time when, let's face it, the technology is changing so quickly that these young people are always going to be ahead of us.
Yeah.
In terms of the learning curve.
Right. And so...
So it deals with a lot of really relevant issues beyond the inspiration of that one case.
Right.
And I mention this not only because I do find the film fascinating and I find all these issues fascinating, and there's so many stories that can be told. I mean, people, we live in an age where people want to, you know, pigeonhole things. So is it like an indie social network? And no, it really isn't, because of course many stories can be told that use internet communities as their starting point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, plus it was made before Social Network.
Yeah, in your face, Social Network.
In your face, Social Network.
Take that.
Great reviews. Variety, of course, referred to your performance as iconic.
Wow.
LA Times, of course, loves you. LA Weekly gave it a rave review. The review, though, as you know, Dean Haglund, from being with me here for more than 4 years now, I hate to deal strictly in the positive.
You going to pull out a negative review for a guest?
Yeah, I'd like to thank The Guardian in London for reviewing the film without having seen it. Oh. They reviewed it on the basis of the
other reviews?
The trailer.
Oh, yeah.
And in one of the most joking and jovial reviews I've ever read, made fun of a film that's, again, inspired by the real-life case of a girl committing suicide. So congratulations, Guardian. Stay classy.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I thought The Guardian had to do proper vetting of all their...
I don't know. But I it's just interesting to me. Again, I think there is one way to look at this that says, oh, that reviewer is a douchebag. There's another way to say that he's not a reviewer at all if he's doing it off trailers, although let's face it, we review trailers on this show.
But we point out where they're the trailers.
And it's about the marketing. We're reviewing
and
the
we're
marketing
go see
campaign.
The movie or not.
But when you peel away certainly my reaction of that's not appropriate and that's certainly not classy and not compassionate in any way, least of all to rip apart artists who have worked so hard for many, many, many months to make a film and then even longer to bring the film to audiences, and to rip that apart in the matter of a few column paragraphs on the basis of a trailer.
Do they say we only saw the trailer? But
Yeah. And the response of the readers is incredible gratitude, because now they don't have to waste their time seeing the film. But what I do think, and this is the point, these issues that we're talking about here with this film are kind of hot button issues, and they are messy issues. Mm-hmm. They aren't easy. They are rich with complexities. There is no right and wrong with any of these issues. Therefore, they are issues that are incredibly worthwhile to explore from multiple angles. But because they are not easy, there is a human reaction to want to find a reason to ignore it altogether.
Right.
Well, and on a symbolic level, it's perfect that The Guardian did that, because this movie is all about jumping to conclusions and perceptions and...
And what do we do in order... Yeah, what rules do we break, both our own rules, rules of decorum, whatever it is, what trust do we betray? How far do we go to violate things like trust and honesty and all these in the name of keeping someone safe?
Right.
And I can't help but be reminded that the name of this news source is The Guardian.
Ah, look at that. Waiter
that just happened. Anyway, so we'll keep people informed, and we'll of course link. But this is going
to
be a big deal. I mean, October 1st, VOD everywhere on cable, video on demand everywhere.
At the sign
Friends with a Z.
Yep, got it.
Yeah, and I think it's very important because bullying is a huge problem, and I have yet to see something that.
Addresses
cyberbullying, the comfort that people have in being just outright mean to other people because of the shield
and
the internet.
And the original title of the film was Mean.
It was Mean.
And I thought that was a really great title because, again, it isn't just about the comfort people feel in being mean in the anonymity, of online. It's actually if I may say, it's the older folks. It's an older generation in the film that find their comfort in their safety to express their meanness through the anonymity of the internet. The younger people in the film are quite comfortable actually being mean to the faces of their friends.
Right. Interesting.
You know, it isn't kind of a behind the back thing. It's there are friendships shown in the film, and boy, they're really not loving and
not
kind
loving.
To each
and
other.
And it's more for the teens. It's more about feeling comfortable expressing the angst and the sadness and the depression online as opposed to
the meanness.
Mean. Right. I mean, there's mean too.
Yeah.
Trust me. But there, it's...
They are teenagers.
They yes. are
after
teenagers.
All.
Awesome.
Now, again, as if that weren't enough, you know...
Wait, there's more?
Well, she's on stage. She's on stage. Here. She's on screen everywhere
right.
that you want to be without yeah. your friends. This last week... You, Dean Haglund, this is going to be of particular interest to you.
What?
You used your voice skills to do
order
a
pizza?
Pilot presentation for Adult Swim.
Indeed, I did.
Tell
Look
us
that.
About this.
Well, it's a presentation for networks in general. Hopefully,
oh,
Adult
so
Swim or
Cartoon
Fox
Network.
Or anything. Yes, it's called Captain Daddy. And it stars Fred Willard and Ed Asner and Tracy Lords.
Holy smokes. Big
Your
names.
Friend in festivals, Tracy Lords.
I sit beside her often signing autographs.
Uh-huh. And
just look for the hot blonde corner.
That's us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
yeah, that's how mm-hmm. we get cast all the time.
And yeah, so I play the daughter of a family who lives in a submarine.
Of course, as one does.
Yes. And the dad is played by Fred Willard. He's Captain Daddy.
Really?
Yep.
And I would thought Ed Asner would have more of a Captain
he's the,
Daddy
He's
voice.
The grandfather.
He's got to be the grandfather.
He's the perverted yes. grandfather that grabs the mom's breasts and whatnot.
Oh, that's funny.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So who's writing, directing? Do we know any of the... Have they done other cartoon
the
series?
The writer-director is Houston Huddleston.
Okay.
And he...
Love the name?
Yes, he's got a fabulous name. And his father was a big composer in Hollywood. He did the...
Who lived in a submarine.
Not Dallas Hudson. Not that guy.
I don't know.
No. Okay.
Again, these things could have been looked up beforehand.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
But he did the Aristocats.
Oh, look at that.
And, so he's been... I actually, for the audition, I had to sing.
Oh, my gosh.
And I sang Don't Smoke in Bed. And after I was done with it, he said, well, you know, my father knew the guy that wrote that. And he told this story about his dad and Judy Garland. And
wow.
Yeah, so he's comes from legit Hollywood stock.
So is this going to be a musical animated thing?
Well, no, because why did you need to sing?
Yeah, why
no?
did you
I
need to sing?
I needed to sing because, in fact, I voice the theme song.
Ah!
Yes, it's a fabulous 80s inspired theme song.
Are you awesome. Allowed to give us a little sample? I know your throat's hurting a little bit right now.
What on the spot?
You're not allowed
it?
To.
No.
You're not allowed to.
Yeah, maybe not allowed to. Okay. I don't know. I didn't.
Why though? This is kind of fun. Why did you have "Don't Smoke in Bed" prepared?
Well, I had Don't Smoke. I actually didn't know that I was supposed to sing in the audition. And luckily, I had just been in a reading of a modern-day Medea set in Texas.
Yeah.
Where I played Katie Couric.
Of course.
Who then sings a very sultry lounge version of Don't Smoke in Bed.
As awesome. Katie Couric would do.
Well, yeah.
Because she played Katie Couric doing a nightclub act.
Right. That's hilarious.
Yes. In a modern version of Medea.
So you just happen to have the sheet music there in your purse.
That well, you just... I had it memorized a cappella.
Ah.
Yes.
So you could just nail Don't Smoke in Bed in the sultry lounge-like in the
Indeed.
Audition. That
Indeed.
Is lucky.
Which was a little bit not exactly a 16-year-old who lives in a submarine, but it... You know, it got me the job.
Enough. There you go. So now this pilot presentation, you have already, you're going to go record it. Is it going to be like they do the movies, like you never get to see Fred Willard?
Right, she didn't. She recorded it last week.
Oh, you're already recorded
She's
it.
She's going yes. in to record again to record the theme song.
Right.
But
you didn't, it's not all the actors hanging out in the room or anything like that. It's like
no.
one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
They splice all the things together. They yep. draw it and then they're going to show it around. And then sell it and make it a series.
Yes.
Called Captain Dad.
Captain Daddy.
Captain Daddy.
That's yeah. good. I do
that
love
is
it.
Good. That
I
is
knew
fun.
You would get a kick out of that.
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome. Okay, so then what else then? This sounds like a career on fire. Where do we go from there? What's happening? Where else do we see? Where?
Well,
oh, there's more?
Yeah, you know, December. we've talked about this show before because you and I have both seen it.
Oh, yeah, your
on
career's on fire
occasions.
By being on Chilpack Hollywood Hour.
No, I don't mean this. I mean, we talked about something she was doing. Anyway, later this in October, middle of October,
Yes.
There's the fifth anniversary show of a show that she's been doing for five years. Amazing how that works out. Where you play...
I got a fever, and the only prescription is more cowbell.
That's lovely. Now, who do you play?
That's right.
You play Christopher Walken in the show All About Walken.
Yes.
This is a show that involves eight different Christopher Walken impersonators of different ages, races, sexes, and creeds. All it's truly the Rainbow Coalition.
Rainbow Coalition of Christopher Walken impersonators.
Bringing to the stage the life of Christopher Walken. Some scenes that you remember from films, but also from his youth, his upbringing, different moments in his career. It imagines different scenes from his life that may or may not have ever happened. It's the life story of Christopher Walken brought to life through... all these different performers who play him at various stages.
I see. But I thought there was an improvised element to it as well.
Oh, yeah. Choose your own walk and adventure.
Instead of an act break, instead of an intermission,
right.
There is choose your own walk and adventure where the audience throws out movies that Christopher Walken was not in, but that they would like to see performed by Christopher Walken.
Right.
How it might have been different if Christopher Walken, for example, had starred in Ice Castles with Robbie Benson.
Wow.
Why have I never actually suggested that?
That's
one?
A good one.
I don't even know.
Go
that
to the show and say Ice Castles.
Because nobody would know what you were talking about.
I think Patrick O'Sullivan might.
Come on. Figure skating? The figure skating story of Robbie Benson?
For example. Christopher Walken, one of my favorites always, Christopher Walken in, what's the Heath Ledger film? Brokeback Mountain.
Brokeback.
Mm-hmm.
He's very good in that, Christopher Walken.
Oh no, there's no place like home.
That's actually not Brokeback Mountain.
That was,
but it could have been.
That was Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Oh my God. So you're, maybe the improv, Choose Your Own Walken, not your strongest part of the show. Now, there is also a really fun part of the show that changes week to week.
Okay.
That is the All About Walken's audition. You see, because many big names apparently auditioned for All About Walken, and you get to see them take the stage and show what their audition was like for All About Walken.
So this is somebody doing an impersonation of
famous people.
Of famous people doing an impersonation of Christopher Walken.
Yes.
Wow.
And so it's really fun. But occasionally, during this audition process, they will actually recreate Lily's true audition for All About Walken. Because when you auditioned all those years ago, you had no Christopher Walken impersonation at all, did
no.
you?
No. No, I actually got a notice about the show. And it said, everybody, all kids, adults, all shapes, sizes, colors... please audition for this. We're doing Christopher Walken impersonations. And I just thought it would be really funny if I did a Christopher Walken impersonation. Because I got it. Because everybody had one. You
right.
know, you go to a party and then there's somebody Everybody's that pulls it out.
Every
you know?
Stand-up does it. It's like that. It was like Jack Nicholson in the 80s.
Yeah.
It's Christopher Walken now.
So I said, yeah, I'm going to have one. That would be funnier than, you know, frat dude that does it every time
right.
by the keg, you know? So, because I'm by the keg so often. And,
with the
know.
Frat dude.
With the frat dude.
And that's your competition. That's especially right. for the roles.
Okay.
In things like Trip to Bountiful.
Let's bring in the Trip to Bountiful. Let's bring in a frat dude by the keg at Lily Hollywood, please.
It's
but, between you and the friend.
So you thought it would be great to
so
have
I thought
that.
It would be great. And I, you know, on my little dictaphone, recorded the Annie Hall monologue, and I was driving down Sunset Boulevard as the Annie Hall monologue was playing in my car. Who gets out of his car in front of the Tiffany Theater? Woody Allen.
No.
Yes.
No.
So surreal.
That's so surreal.
Yes.
The guy never comes to LA.
I know.
He suddenly was there in front of the Tiffany.
Yes.
And he was going into audition for Walken?
Yes. No. I mean,
really? And Woody Allen doing Christopher Walken. Now there is a double impersonation I want to see.
Yeah. That should be in the...
But the point is, so you worked on this, but when you got into the audition...
When I got in, you know, I was still pretty feeble.
Uh-huh.
But I said, you know, look, I don't do a Christopher Walken impersonation, But I do a mean James Carville.
James Carville,
the news. Of the,
well, James yes. Carville was a
Raging Cajun.
The Raging Cajun, famous presidential advisor, married. Yeah. He's a Democrat advisor. Helped get Bill Clinton elected president.
Okay.
Married to Republican strategist Mary Madeline.
How ironic!
Complete political differences, and yet a long-standing and very loving marriage between those two. But he is quite the character, and indeed now is not only a media commentator but has an acting career. You may remember he played the governor a good performance as the governor in the assassination of Jesse James.
Oh, that was him.
Yeah, the Raging Cajun. So anyway, of all performances. Of all impersonations, somehow this super cute, petite, little blonde with blue eyes from Washington, D.C. does an impersonation of a middle-aged to older, bald, ugly as sin political strategist from New Orleans. Is that where he's from?
Yeah.
Can we hear your James Carville now?
Of course.
Okay.
And on the far left, I'm James Carville. Joe, this war was inevitable, but will it go far enough? Does this administration have what it takes to finish the job?
Wow. It's as if I'm listening to a Democratic strategy session.
Unfortunately, the listeners don't get the visual of
the
my
visual
face.
The visual is also hilarious.
Complete
it's totally
facial transformation.
That's true. And unfortunately, you didn't lead with that as one of your experiences when talking to E.T. sculptress Cynthia Crawford. So the fifth anniversary of this show is coming up here in Los Angeles. You've taken the show to New York. You've taken the show to San Francisco, Sacramento. I don't know. Some other places.
Yes.
Like vaudeville again.
Stockton, California. That was actually our biggest venue. I think that was like 350.
So really? If anyone ever comes to L.A., and I mean this show after 5 years, you know, used to be every week, right. And every week it would fill a house of 100 seats, which in L.A. theater is
pretty amazing
for a comedy show, rather incredible.
Yeah.
And there's still the demand for it. So anyone coming to L.A. should definitely, obviously, look up All About
yes.
Walk-In.
And where is it playing?
It's going to be at the Dragonfly this time around.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
That's Dragonfly, not the rock venue.
Yeah, rock venue.
You're kidding.
It's a bigger venue. They need a slightly bigger venue. And so,
wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know they did plays at the old, in Silver Lake, the Dragonfly.
Yeah, in Hollywood.
Oh.
You know, they do the Point Break live there.
Yeah, because they were doing it here downtown at the Down and Out.
Yeah.
Charlie O's old theater.
But, there's just something about Christopher Walken that everybody loves.
Right.
It's that je ne sais quoi weirdness, kind of just embrace that really crazy weirdness inside.
Yeah. And did you see him on Broadway?
Behanding in Spokane.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the highlights of my life.
That was awesome.
So far.
Yeah.
Yes.
You seeing him was one of the highlights of his life.
Yes.
It's true.
How do you know that to be true?
I don't know. I got a phone call one day from someone who sounded a lot like Walken saying that he was. Lily Holloman, with the little time we have left, I want to run through some of your credits. Of course, a lot of people have seen you on television in a recurring role on the drama Southland.
Indeed.
Playing the former addict, heroin addict.
Former meth addict prostitute. Who's on the clean
and trying to keep her baby.
Yes, her baby is found in the middle of the road alone, and the meth addicted father had put her in a box.
I just naturally assumed it was Dean Haglund teaching the child how to fly.
Little organizational skills.
There was an E.T. sculptress on the other side of the road. People may also know you from a recurring role on every season of Tracy Ullman's State of the Union.
Yes. I was lucky enough to get cast in season one of Tracy Ullman's State of the Union and profoundly shocked and amazed to find her very complimentary of my work.
That's lovely.
And
treated you like an old friend when you came back the next season.
Yes, even more grateful when she continued to write me roles.
And let you improvise. I mean,
yes.
you were told after you'd been improvising a little bit in one of the scenes that, you know, leave the improvising to Tracy. And then Tracy more or less invited you to improvise.
Wow.
She did.
What's fantastic about this also is that Tracy Ullman had always been one of your real inspirations, along with, I think, Lily Tomlin and maybe Lucille Ball.
Yeah.
Those were the three women that really inspired you. And here you are not only getting to meet, but being basically getting to play with.
Totally gratifying experience too. You know, people say that they meet their heroes and it's
disappointing,
a disaster, but this is complete opposite. I mean, just pure bliss, joy, lovely to work with. Aww. And the crowning glory of it all, the last episode that I filmed with her, I actually got to wear one of her wigs.
Wow.
So
do
I
you
was
have the same head size?
Officially crowned.
You have the same head size as Tracy Ullman?
I think they could maybe adjust it a little.
Dean Hagland, really quick, I don't think I've ever asked you this question. Have you ever had the chance, either as an actor or as a comic, to work with one of your real inspirations or heroes?
Well, you know, Richard Belzer came on and did a Lone Gunman.
Right.
It was an X-Files episode, but it was Lone Gunman specific. And then, you know, I'd seen him do stand-up and stuff, and I said to him, hey, you know, Entertainment Tonight camera crew is here. Let's go do like some fun comedy bits. And together we went off to another studio and did hilarious bits where he like yelled at me. And then we had a giant fan, so my long hair was blowing back like a Maxell ad. And, you know, we did all these bits. And then, of course, Entertainment Tonight erased all those tapes. But it was fun. It was like, you know, that sort of thing. So, again, and he was so game for it. And he signed my Polaroid. The whole nine yards.
You've some other credits, Lil. You've, of course, the Disney. Was it Disney show?
Sunny with a Chance.
You get recognized a great deal for that. So a lot of guest starring roles on television. And so this question I would have for both of you.
Uh-oh.
What's the best thing about working as a guest star on something, you know, on television? Because I've always been interested in this. I always think that it must be really hard to come new to something, you know, that's already established, where there's already this family, this close-knit work. What's the best part about working as a guest star, and what is the hardest part about it?
Well, speaking from someone who's then had the lead on the show, the responsibility of carrying that show is a lot of weight to actually carry from day to day. And so being a guest star, it's the breeze of just like, I'm just going to come every, hey, sorry, you're running behind everybody. I got to be in my trailer, you know, to hell with you guys. So all of those issues that, you know, come when you actually are the lead in a series are gone when you're a guest star. And that's actually, if you're at all sensitive to those pressures, it's much easier.
It would seem, though, as a flip, though, if you haven't had the experience as the lead,
right,
you could feel very much like unwanted child.
Or you feel the pressure that you got one day as a guest star to nail it and get all your stuff, whereas, you know, that's the opposite of that. So it's like, oh, you know, if you come in that day, you're a little under the weather, or, you know, your dogs woke you up at 4 a.m., hello, then you have to go on set. Then it's like, geez, this is my one chance to like pull this all together.
So how about you, Lil? I mean, would you agree? Is the hardest part having Dean's dogs wake you at 4 a.m. or
when I send them over?
Yeah, I think the hardest part of a supporting role in general is coming in and bringing the whole world with you. When you're a lead, the world is created for you.
Yes.
You're immersed in the show. You're immersed in the costumes. It's like everybody is working for you. When you're a guest star, you're basically responsible for the whole thing. So I would say that it's, besides the hours of being a lead, it's more challenging in a way. You have less time. It's fast. And it's fun because of that challenge. So the challenge is what makes it fun.
Right. But at the same time, you don't feel that pressure. But you wouldn't know about the pressure until you felt it on the other side.
Yeah, no.
To go, I mean, oh my God, this is way more pressure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So But yeah, you do have to bring in a world and create that. And you're not given any backstory. That's also another thing, you know.
None.
Here's your like here's your lines. Yeah. Now come in and develop the whole character like you've always lived. And why are you even talking in this series in the first place?
Yeah.
Like, you know, the writers sometimes just need you to like say five lines to get you to the next to get the leads to the next scene.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to make sense of that. It's like, holy smokes, that's a lot of pressure.
In Dragon Con, you were on a panel about actors and acting with Howard Hessman and Leah Thompson.
Leah Thompson.
Right? Howard Hessman, head of the class, WKRP.
Leah Thompson, Back to the Future, the mother and Back to the Future.
Caroline in the City.
Caroline in the City.
And was this the kind of what the discussion was about? Or was there any... what did you take away from that discussion?
I took away Howard Hessman's experiences on Dragnet. I'm afraid everything else is erased other than Jack Webb directed and micromanaged the whole set and made everybody read off teleprompters. So Howard Hessman actually memorized his lines. He played a hippie that was in doing drugs. And Jack Webb said, no, forget that. Just read it off these teleprompters. And it was one of the first shows. And that's why everybody just sort of stands and delivers in that series, because they're all reading off teleprompters. I know. That's not really what you wanted to
hear. Yeah, it wasn't. That was a great story. Lil, what's the best part of being a guest star on these things?
The best part is getting to taste lots of different shows and coming in and being a part of it. I've only had positive experiences being guest stars, and people are extremely welcoming, and it's been free and easy and collaborative, and so I've really lucked out.
Now, what's the best part of being a second guest on Chilpack Hollywood Hour?
Well, first, the best part of being a guest Chilpack Hollywood Hour is that you get to do the commercial for The Truth Is Out There. So you've got in 30 seconds, 45 seconds, tell people why they should get the epic documentary of comedy, consciousness, and conspiracy, The Truth Is Out There.
They should get The Truth Is Out There because it is a truly unique perspective on the world of conspiracies. Dean Haglund is a man of many colors, and he brings improv comedy, he brings depth, he brings openness and adventure and fun to this world that for many can seem very dark. And he navigates the waters beautifully.
I'm right here.
Did you want me to address you?
That was very good.
That was very good.
No, don't please don't talk about Phil. People's friend in podcasting, Phil Larinus.
Do not.
You know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, and of course, Phil Larinus navigates this through the medium of Dean Haglund.
And how about that editing job? That's how I was at.
And it looks... so
like
pretty.
$1 million.
And people can get their copy of The Truth Is Out There on DVD, on two-disc edition, collector's edition DVD with more
bonus
than 80
material.
Minutes of bonus. And thank God, very soon, the Blu-ray.
The
Blu-ray is going into production this week, so we'll be shipping in a matter of weeks a Blu-ray version of Truth Is Out There. If you're in Europe, if you're in the United States... you can order it from the website truth-is-out-there.com. We hope you do, especially in time for the holidays.
Yes.
Finally, Lily Holloman, the best part of being a two-time guest on your Chillback Hollywood Hour is you get a gift.
Ooh.
Every two-time guest gets a gift. And so,
it's
Lily Holloman, in this priority mailbox is your gift... as a two-time guest.
What is it?
Yes.
Is it an alien sculpture?
What? We don't know.
Ah, you fooled me.
Uh-huh.
I got the little baby alien.
A star child.
Oh. Made by Cynthia Crawford.
Cynthia Crawford. Everybody should check out her work. She's an amazing artist. I mean, anything else aside, whatever you think about stories of aliens, of UFOs, of supernatural, of whatever you think, there is no denying that her artwork is extraordinary.
It's extraordinary, and she's a wonderful, warm, refreshing human being.
And her website is etsculptor.com. etsculptor.com. Cynthia Crawford. Lily Holloman.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Awesome. Enjoy your alien.
And you know, these open the portals for alien experiences.
That's right. Now you can go back.
So a UFO will be
you'll be visited
by my
it.
Window tonight.
Yes. We can
Were
only
you
hope.
Visited?
No.
No?
No, I didn't
well,
touch
maybe
it.
That's
I left
it's
it
been wrapped
I,
up and in a box.
In wrap, so
no,
I,
but maybe that's why your dog woke up in the middle of the night.
Oh, growling. That's
Hello.
Right.
Hello.
There was a horror. My dog had a nightmare and ran to the door growling and stopped actually right by the alien sculpture. Maybe
Hello.
It's raising, it resonated with the dogs.
Yes.
There you go. There's a whole experience.
Very interesting. Well, I'll report back if Lily has any interesting experiences
Love
with
it.
This. On next week's show, of course, you can find your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
Every
dozens
episode.
And dozens of past episodes. And someday you'll be able to find all of them. We trust again there.
Yeah.
At chillpackhollywood.com, C-H-I-L-L-P-A-K Hollywood.com. You can download them. You can stream them. You can subscribe via iTunes and really simple syndication.
Yep.
Listen to us on Jackalope Radio.
We love them.
Listen to us at TalkSuperStation.com.
We love them.
Become a liker of the show on
like
Facebook
us.
At Facebook.com/ChillPackHollywood. We
so
love
easy.
Interacting with everyone.
We do.
Follow us on Twitter.
Yes.
Dean is...
Oh, I'm at D. Haglin.
And I'm at Phil Lernis.
Yeah.
And please write us, ChillPackHollywood@yahoo.com, C-H-I-L-L-P-A-K, Hollywood@yahoo.com. And please, if you haven't already... We beseech you. We
beseech.
Made a fantastic,
a joyous
bonus that will never be played.
Never.
Fourth anniversary show. Kind of a highlight show, but after 4 years without missing a week, you know, you can't really call it a highlight show. But it
every show's a highlight.
It's very funny. I had Dean in hysterics listening to it.
it's true.
And it includes many never before heard pieces. And we're selling it for $1.29.
How can we do it that cheap?
Write us chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com if you would like this. And please know that this show, your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, will always be free. It will be free every single week. And by purchasing this $1.29 bonus anniversary show, you are ensuring that your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour will always be free.
It's that easy.
And we thank those who have already ordered it.
Absolutely.
Until next week, I'm Phil Lernis.
I'm Dean Haglin. Thanks, Lily.
Bye.